In 1998, Claudia Rowe was a young stringer for the New York Times living in Poughkeepsie in upstate New York when Kendall Francois was arrested and charged with murdering 8 women, most of their bodies found in the attic of the squalid home he shared with his parents and sister. Claudia was struggling with demons from her own child and in her own relatively well-off Manhattan family. She wrote the serial killer a letter.
I've seen you in court and in the newspapers, and I've spoken with a few people who know you. I keep hearing that you were a pretty good student at Arlington and a very good chess player, interested in history and political science, but I would much rather hear about you from you yourself. Your story seems somehow important to understand. That's why I'm writing to you. I am interested in you as a person, and I want you to know there is someone out here who is concerned about you.
And with that, down the rabbit hole, Claudia Rowe went on a journey that spanned 18 years and included letters, prison visits, reconciliation with her own family, and a book as honest as it's disturbing. What was her attraction to the killer? What did he want from her? And why didn't his family notice the stench of dead bodies that clung to theirs, the maggots that dropped from the ceiling onto their bed? Claudia joins us now on the line from the studios of KUOW in Seattle. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Boy, it is a tough read when you read scenes like that. You take us inside the home of a serial killer. As you try to get inside the mind of a serial killer, what compelled you to do that?
Initially, I felt that Kendall Francois might be able to answer for me a question that had framed my life and haunted me from childhood, and that was about cruelty and explosive violence. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to understand that motivation. I felt that if I could understand what was behind that level of violence, it would be less terrifying to me, more comprehensible.
Well, then let's explain, as you slowly do over the course of the book, your mother was often filled with rage, very angry, a violent rage. And I don't know, I'm wondering if maybe you had a suppressed rage at that and wondered if that's something that the killer had. I mean, tell us more.
Surely the anger and emotional violence in my family growing up was the reason that I was so compelled to untangle this question. What drives a person to hurt when they know that they're hurting the other?
Let's talk about that letter for a second. I want you to know there's someone out here who's concerned about you. Now, I'm reading this book as a reporter, someone who's done reporting, and I wondered how you navigated that. You know, trying to reel somebody in to try to get a story and be honest about why. Were you really concerned about him?
I questioned myself about that phrase, and I actually was. I was horrified and nauseated by him, but as I had seen him in court for his sentencing, there was this profound sense of alienation and loneliness and depression that hung about him like a cloud, despite all of his attempts to act grandiose or bombastic. Mm. I was concerned about anyone who is living in a home in the conditions that the police described, who felt so out of step with their community. That was something that I related to. I felt that it was a reasonable supposition to see Kendall as also a person very, very much alienated from his community.
Let me read a little of his second letter back to you. "Well, well, Claudia. Can I call you Claudia? I'll have to give it to you. When confronted, at least you're honest." He had asked you some questions. "You're also prompt, as a good reporter should be. But you still write like a reporter. You're not showing any heart or passion. Details. You know, how much did you worry about becoming the fly to this spider?"
Well, I think the question of who is the spider and who is the fly is open to debate here.
Yeah.
And I think possibly we both are both at different times in the story. But he strikes a deal and he says, "Okay, I'll talk to you and you can know who I am, but only if I know who you are too. So we're going to talk not as reporter and subject, but as he put it, friends." Now, we were never friends, and I was never on board with being his friend, nor did he treat me like a friend. However, at that point, I was so rabid to understand this mystery of cruelty, I probably would have agreed to almost anything.
Just want to talk for a minute about the other players in this story, the rest of the cast. I mean, as a reader, you wonder at the end, What happened to the family? Didn't anybody think they knew what was going on?
They were never charged, and they said that they didn't know. He did have these five bodies in the attic and three in the basement. I think that we can surmise from the condition of the home that these were people who lived in disconnect, who lived in denial, who lived in such a way that they were unable to connect their home with reality. The fact that they were able to live with this and not see it speaks to a profound level of denial, maybe not unique to them.
Well, in fact, did the pain of your childhood give you some insight into that and some understanding of that? You talk about your dad sort of not reacting when your mom would have one of her rage episodes.
Absolutely. This is what locked me in and drew me to this case. It was something that had both infuriated and bewildered me for most of my life. Nothing like, well, at the level of the Françoise was my reality. But there was a certain amount of fear and damage, and nobody reacted to it. When I would speak with forensic psychologists and psychiatrists, they would often say severe physical or sexual abuse is not a precursor for this kind of violent rage. However, profound emotional disconnect and emotional neglect at home is.
So over years now, as we take the story forward, he's in jail, you're visiting him on occasion, and you kind of admit that now you have to face maybe your own addiction to him. Was there a moment when the cloud lifted, when you suddenly saw him more clearly than before?
He was really savvy. This is a man really into games. He loved video games and role-playing games and fantasy games and all kinds of games and rules and hierarchies and punishment and reward. He was really into rules. So I think he got a real kick out of flipping the reporter's script. And there were moments when what I was doing kind of came clear to me in a flash, and I would feel tremendous fear, you know, full body paralysis or tremendous nausea, hatred for him when I would see report after report after report on about what he had done to women. And I would try to process it, but I had to keep going. I really couldn't stop until finally I did stop. It took years, though.
It took years. Who are you when you stop? What's the end of this story?
The story of my correspondence with Kendall Francois is really the story of my coming into my own, both as a woman and as a writer and as a reporter. And what finally made me stop was learning to stand up for myself, really. And how long was I going to do this dance with this abusive person? And I think that that is something that many people in all kinds of relationships may be able to relate to. So I also had a very different relationship with my family. And I'd come to an understanding of my mother, most of all, and somewhat my father, that was very different from where I was at the beginning. I had come to see them as more complete people with their own ghosts. I had come to an understanding of this complexity in people, and I didn't need to subject myself to him any longer.
Well, and do you have sympathy for him? I mean, how do you feel about him now?
I feel tremendous regret when I think about Kendall Francois. I feel tremendous regret for the child that he once was and what must have happened to make a child become the person that he did become. Evil or monster, those words, they're not wrong, but they don't give me anything. They don't tell me anything about who is this person as a person. And Kendall Francois, despite being monstrous in his acts, he did have a few threads of humanity that remained sort of buried within this heaving, seething body. I think they are part of the reason that I was locked in for so long, because I could see these threads of a person that he once might have been or could have been were the circumstances of his life different.
You also bring to life his victims.
Thank you
for bringing that up. For these young women. And
I think that there are really important themes here to look at. And one of those themes is misogyny. There was profound dismissal of women who were the wrong kinds of women. They weren't clean and wholesome. They were drug addicted and suffering, and they didn't make a pretty picture. And that may have been why the local newspaper devoted almost no coverage to this in the early stages. That insistence on denying what's right in front of us was one of the things that drew me to this case right away. And the denial of the suffering of these women on Main Street really was inescapable.
Claudia Rowe, her new book is The Spider and the Fly. As she says, who was which? Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.